Hi, and welcome to the Unhinged History Podcast, the podcast where two people compulsively learn history stories on their own, and then they come out of the dark caves that they have been hiding in and decide to tell the other one the story that they only recently learned all of the details to. I am host number one. I'm Teresa, and that is...
Angie.
And... unfortunately, Angie made the comment earlier this week, I'm going to share this with everybody, where I had basically said that I've got a great story for her, and she tried to get me to tell her who it was. And so I decided that since she really wanted to know, I would just emotionally torture her and tell
it's
her
been
husband.
Terrible.
Like, hey, the man, this is who I'm covering. Oh, Angie's going to love that. Yeah, I know. You're going to keep it from her, right? Oh, of course.
And I'm just going to let you know that he has thoroughly enjoyed every minute of me trying to convince him to tell me. So much so that just in the last 10 to 15 minutes, whilst on our afternoon phone call, did he say to me, "I never told you it was a woman. This whole time I've been guessing men." And he refuses to give me pronouns. He will neither confirm nor deny. Because this I finally said, oh my God, I forgot about a whole other gender. Is it a woman?
This must really upset you because I was really good with the pronoun game in our conversation about it too. I will say that the one hint I did give Angie, because I wanted her to spiral, because that is the kind
and
of human
did.
I am. I said, you shared a picture of them in one of your stories in passing. Like, it could have been,
so
it could
mad.
Have been on your notes. It could have just been you looked them up on the internet to go, I didn't include this in my notes, but here's the photo.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I need you to know how I literally went. Okay. So day one, I said, is it Zahi Hawass? Because that would drive me nuts. And Ian goes, no. And I said, okay. Oh my God, she's going to do Ragnar, isn't she? And he goes, no. And I'm like, great. So I've just given myself 1,200 years to work with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thanks, babe. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I realized there was no saving me. And I was going to keep asking narrower and narrower questions and still get vaguer and vaguer answers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So basically, you're a monster that has kept me in some sort of, what's the word? State of suspense for days. And
I have
if
that
you do
effect
not tell
on
me your
people.
story stat, I will throw a revolt. Like one throws a party, I will throw a revolt.
I'm just going to sit back and watch. I mean, I've got nothing else to do tonight. I don't know if you understood this.
Like, I am here to watch the world burn, dear. Like, I don't know if you know this.
I mean, between the two of us, that's on my resume.
I mean, I'm good for a bonfire, you know? I'm here for it.
I'm
but not
I've
at
got
myself.
Gasoline.
Allow me to light the match.
Yeah, you know, I'm here for you. That's what I am. You know, I'm an enabler.
You know, when you know what your gift is and you're strong in it, you work with it, you know?
When I die, I don't want God to come to me and say, Teresa, how come you weren't more like Ange? He's going to be like, look, I gave you a very unique skill set. You are highly gifted at being you. I wanted you to be you. And I'm just like, I'm a fire starter.
You used your gifts well, he's going to say.
He's going to be like, you know, I gave you one trick and you did it well over and over.
Mm-hmm. Every day.
You were consistent. Well done, my good and faithful child. Yeah. So obviously I went to a religious school, but yeah, these are things. Okay. So my story was suggested by a mutual follower of mine on TikTok. Her name is Clotilde. I'd never asked how to say the last part of her handle, which is Mauvais. She does the black and white. She dresses up in very retro housemaid, or not housemaid, housewife
Oh, I think I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. So she and I are mutuals. And so she told me, she's like, oh, you got to cover Marie Laveau. Oh, your face, your face. You are so pissed.
You need to understand, Ian just walked in too. Can I take a moment?
Yeah.
I had the beginnings of notes going.
Did you? Okay. Well, then
You're
you
going to
can
need to
always.
bring me a snack.
Tried to give you a region clue with your jambalaya.
I thought you were. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. He said to me yesterday, he made a comment about making jambalaya, and he said just now that when he said that comment, he was trying to give me a region clue by mentioning jambalaya.
You needed jambalaya with your podcast.
Basically,
Do you
what he
think I
did is
put those two together?
no, because now every single time in the future he says something like, hey, do you want Sasquatch chicken? She's doing somebody from China, ain't she?
That is exactly what's going to happen. The other thing that's going to happen is every time I make Cajun food, I'm going to be pissed at you. And him. It's
Would
going
you
to be
like
a.
apple pie? Is this a German reference or are we talking about American? Because the Germans were originated up. Angie, bring it down.
That's exactly how this is gonna go. Okay.
Oh, this is even better. I love that I have sown the seeds of discord in your marriage.
Well, you'll also be paying for our therapy bill.
I'll just drive you to divorce. That'll be cheaper.
But I like this one.
Well, then you're going to need to work on having less therapy sessions.
You're a jerk. I had to take my sweater off. All right.
Got the
Hit
heart
me.
rate
I'm
up.
so excited.
Okay, so my sources, a podcast Beyond Bourbon Street, Marie Laveau, Vodou Prince Priestess, and Vodou is Voudou. That is important. The History Chicks, they did a episode on her. I love the History Chicks. And then there is a book that I had to get my hands on and I had to binge it. And it was by Carolyn Merrill Long, a New Orleans Voodoo Priestess, The Legend and Reality of Marie Laveau. And then there was a women's history blog, Marie Laveau. Now, did you have a visceral reaction to the book? Because you moved. Oh, you're just,
I'm
okay.
having a, I'm excited.
Okay. And I'll admit that I recognize you have bigger draws to Voodoo Queens, even though
I
I
do.
have covered two of them to your zero on this podcast. But I recognize that I come into it going, oh, this is brand new to me. How exciting. And you tiptoe through the tulips of remembrance when you think about them.
It's true.
So I decided to come at this story from starting with the myth. Or, what
Okay.
is the popular culture? Where, what, when we think of Marie Laveau, what do we think about?
Oh, you know, I'm going to be honest, and I'm going to start with her hair. I know that's so weird, but I have this visual image in my mind of what I think she looks like that I know doesn't particularly line up. But anyway, carry on.
Okay.
Sorry, I just got so excited.
No, I'm for this. So from oral history, from popular culture, Marie Laveau hails from a mix of free people, color slaves, colonial white settlers. Like she's a fun melting pot. From the histories, September 10th, 1794, she's born. She's the illegitimate daughter of a wealthy Creole pet plantation owner named Charles Laveau and his mistress Marguerite. She lives on her dad's plantation where she's educated, and then she becomes a hairdresser, which
As you
apparently.
do.
Which was the trade of many people of color in the area. So as a hairdresser, she'd be invited to the homes of wealthy women, and that's where she really learns all the secrets and the gossip and everything going on. Everybody spills the tea. And if she's not at the homes of the wealthy hairdressers, then she's working on the hair of the servants who pretty much know all of the tea.
Could you
Because,
imagine?
oh, I honestly, my hairdresser knows quite a bit about me, and I know quite a bit about her, but I only have one hairdresser, and she's got multiple clients a day.
I think about that all the time. Like, my hairdresser knows everything. Yeah.
Because my hairdresser will be doing my hair, and she'll be like, "Don't we don't like we don't like them, don't we? No, we don't like them." I thought I remembered that. I'm like, yeah. So Marie Laveau is a devout Catholic, and she grows up attending mass daily. 1809, we're going to shift focus a tiny bit. There's this man named Jacques Paris. He came to New Orleans. He's part of the Haitian immigration. So Haiti had a revolution in 1804, and there ends up becoming waves of immigrants that come to New Orleans as a result. And these new immigrants consisted of French-speaking white planters and thousands of slaves, as well as free people of color. Those with African ancestry helped revive voodoo and other African-based cultural practices in the New Orleans community, and the Creole population of color just increases dramatically, just through the roof. It's 10 years later in 1819 that Laveau and Paris get married. They live in the French Quarter. And 5 years later, he goes missing. And he leaves her with two small
Yes.
children.
As they do.
Yeah. And she insists that he died, and she starts calling herself the Widow Perry. There's evidence that he might have deserted her. Which
I mean, she can think he's dead. That's fine.
he's dead to her, and that's what matters.
Yeah. Thank you. That was the phrase I was looking for.
And she looks good in black, so there's that.
Kill it.
Now, after this, she goes into work as a hairdresser to do what she can to support her family. And these women, they look to her as confidant, therapist, and they're confessing their most intimate secrets and desires, maybe about their husbands, their lovers, maybe both, their estates, their families. They talk about their husband's mistresses because, of course, if your husband's going to step out, you get the inkling. It's rare that he has a secret family on the other side of town and you had no idea.
Yeah. And if you didn't, we'd like to chat with you.
I mean, hey, look, there's some people who just dad is a traveling salesman and he goes on the road, and half the time he's home and half the time he's not. Half the time he's
Yeah.
working in Milwaukee, and half the time Karen in Milwaukee is making him meatloaf. Anyhow, that was this weird aside. Now,
I think of Karen in Milwaukee.
with a killer meatloaf recipe, let's be honest.
Karen, can you call us?
I know. So, do we use Ritz crackers or are you using the saltines? What's your secret?
Doing ketchup straight in the middle? Is that what we're mixing it with?
Yeah,
I
like,
hate ketchup, by the way.
do you like in the
Yeah.
meatloaf in general, on the meatloaf?
Period.
If I
Period.
smuggled it in the meatloaf, would you know that it had some tomato sauce? Is it, do you hate tomato sauce?
No, just ketchup. Yeah, I know.
Okay, so you
Ketchup has
hate
a different taste.
sweet tomato sauce.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, I can work with this.
Oh my goodness.
Okay, so Marie's doing a ton of things, right? She's being a hairdresser, and then because this girl has no chill, she's actually ministering to prisoners on death row, and she's also doing things like taking sick into her own home and nursing them back to health. And it's about 1826 that she enters into basically a common law marriage with a man who has the most French name that I am ever going to butcher, Louis Christophe Dumesnil de Gapion. And he actually descends from French nobility. Grandpa, so somebody, I think about grandpa level, was a chevalier, so literal knight.
Oh, okay.
And then he comes down to New Orleans and he meets Marie Laveau, and he's like, hey, I'm gonna shack up with her. And they have like, it's illegal for blacks and whites to marry because America. And so they just live together. Like, I think the technical term is like a place or something like that. Like, here's where I'm going beyond my skill level. Now they had a very successful relationship as far as I'm concerned, because the oral tradition tells us they had 15 children. So they knew how things work. They made the things work, and they had 15 little trophies as a result. Now
In fact,
it's about 1830. She meets a dude who is, he goes by the, his name is John Bayou, and he's known as Dr. John. And it's from him that she learns more about the religion of her mother and her grandmother, great grandmother. And she weaves voodoo with Catholicism. So we're thinking the holy water, the incense, the statues of the saints, the Christian prayers. She combines all of it. And this helps make her voodoo and hoodoo more acceptable to the upper class, because now we're combining with elements that they know and understand. And her beliefs included the recognition of spiritual forces. You think about it, right? Like the kinds that can be mischievous. You know, you hide your keys are not hidden, or not hidden, you're not easily found, and you're trying to get out the door. You can't
Right.
find your hairbrush or whatever it is, all the way to the car not working, the trouble at work, the whole nine. And she uses her connection with these spirits to really engage and do positive things. And she's achieving this through music, dance, singing, dancing with snakes. She has this giant
As you
snake
do.
named Zombie. And
As you do.
I mean, why not? Why not? Now, she quickly establishes herself as the voodoo queen of New Orleans. And she goes from, like, basically being a nobody to full-on voodoo priestess. She's
I mean,
holding
if you're gonna do
go
it.
big, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So she's holding ceremonies in this place called Congo Square, and it's an area of town where slaves and free people of color can come together on Sundays. They can have a market, they can dance, they can bring in some of their traditional music. Like, it can be a real lively place. It's a place where, while technically slaves aren't supposed to be congregating, everybody turns a blind eye and this thing just happens. So it's a very fun place for, you to kind of let your hair down and be yourself if you're a person of color. And she's also doing these fun things. She ends up getting this place called the Maison Blanche on the shores of Lake Pontchartrain. And she would host secret voodoo meetings here. And she, according to the mythology, is procuring willing black women for white men who are looking for liaisons. And, sometimes there might be some blackmail proof that allows her to have further business dealings with these white men about their liaisons that she's maybe furnished.
As you do.
And it's maybe in Maison Blanche, where she's hosting these crazy voodoo rituals, that they might have devolved into, I don't know, drunken orgies and bathing naked in large groups in the lake.
As
Maybe.
you
I mean, because nothing says let your hair down like that drunken
get the
orgy and then
hair
bathing
out of the
naked.
tea on and get naked.
Yeah. So that's basically like when people think of her and they think about the craziness, that's what they think of. Have I missed anything so far? Because I mean, you have
No.
notes started on this. Okay. And then she makes quite a bit of money selling gris-gris.
As you do.
Now, gris-gris, because I looked this up because I'm a nerd, is basically charms. They could be, combinations of dust, dirt, like grave dirt,
Things,
bones, thing.
potpourri.
Yeah, little pieces of paper that may contain writing or bits of the Quran or the whole nine, right? Like it could be a combination
Your
of a
hair,
ton of
yeah.
things, right? Now she's combining a lot of these things and making gri-gri and selling them to people. And she also acts as an oracle. And this I found fascinating because she's conducting these private rituals in her house on this little cottage in St. Anne Street that her grandmother lived in, that she was raised in. And this is in the French Quarter. It doesn't exist now. I really wish it did. And while she's there, she's performing exorcisms and offering sacrifices to the spirits and really like blending her knowledge of everything that she's picked up as a hairdresser along with her intuition. And I found that part fascinating because even if she didn't, let's say she did it all and was not a con artist. Let's say she did it all from her heart. The sheer amount of knowledge and intel, she would see patterns. She'd be able to make predictions. She would have a stronger intuition than the average person who has less input of all of those other things. And I found that so exciting because, of course, she's going to have more accurate predictions. She's got more data.
Oh, she has all the data.
Yeah.
When you're doing the hair of the upstairs and downstairs.
To quote Angie, in fact.
In fact.
I couldn't help it. Like I could hear you saying that to you. And I was like, I need a beat. I'll play the Angie.
You need to beat me to me?
I mean, you weren't going to say it to you. And it was worth it.
You're right. Now, I'm sorry.
No. You don't apologize for that. I've got a list of things you can apologize for, but not that.
Okay.
So one newspaper refers to Marie Laveau as the notorious hag who reigns over the ignorant and superstitious as queen of the voodoos, which that's harsh.
That really is not giving her good vibes.
No, I don't like any of that. She's really feared for her power with numerous stories of what happened, in quotation marks, to anyone who offended her. And at the same time, she's healing the sick and is regarded by many of her admirers at the time as a living saint because of all of the amazing work that she's doing in her community. Now, one story that gets repeated in nearly any source that I could find talks about how this man wanted, or his father wanted him to get out of a prison sentence, and Marie Laveau, to, you know, really, you know, practice the good voodoo, she put three hot peppers in her mouth, burning peppers, goes and prays for hours, and then leaving the peppers in her mouth, praying the entire time, goes to court before court convenes and places the peppers from her mouth under the judge's chair. And then the defense makes their case, and the judge is swayed by the pain that Marie felt while praying with the peppers in her mouth, and he acquits the man.
Everybody has to have a skill set.
I mean, I too can endure large amounts of pain, but I typically don't put it to good use.
Well, I guess here we have a turning point. We can be a new person tomorrow.
I guess I need to, you know, really pivot at that last step and actually do something with the pain. Now, 1875, things change. She gives her last performance and she announces that she's retiring as Queen of the Voodoos and she's going to be living at home in her peaceful little cottage on St. Anne Street in the Old Quarter. But she never really retires. And she continues her work for a while longer. And that's when it's said that she really amps up her visiting the poor and the imprisoned and then giving readings at her home. There's other reports that state that Marie Laveau helped out with the Underground Railroad.
I'd believe that.
Now, we do know that on June 15th, 1881, Marie Laveau died peacefully in her house at St. Anne Street at the age of 86. And then there's an eminent writer Lafcadio Hearn, he refers to her as the kindest, one of the kindest women who ever lived. And her fame, it spread out. Like, we don't know a lot about her life in truth, you know, when we think about it. But she received prominent obituaries in the New York Times, in the New Orleans Times, in the Picayune. Reporters paint her in the most glorious terms. She's a saintly figure who nursed the sick and prayed incessantly for the diseased and the condemned. And she's buried in St. Louis Cemetery number 1 in the Lavaux-Glapion family crypt, which apparently is 3 stories. And her grave is visited more times than Elvis's, Graceland.
I believe it. I would
And
totally
then,
believe it.
because she's visited so much, her family realizes that she's not getting any peace in death. And so they move her to St. Louis Cemetery number 2 into what is called the Wishing Vault or the Voodoo Vault. And it's on this grave that visitors are illegally drawing XXX on the white slab in hopes that her spirit will grant their wishes and their prayers and their hopes. Her daughter, Marie Laveau-Glapion, is referred to as Marie II. She's born, we're going to back up a second, in 1827 as one of the 15 children crowding that St. Anne's cottage. Now, we don't know whether she chose to follow mom's footsteps into the voodoo path or whether it was chosen for her, but she attempts to carry on her mom's voodoo work and she never matches her mother's fame. And so tour guides typically conflate the two Maries and say that she lived and practiced for 140 years. Well, since that math doesn't math, and there is a woman who is also named Marie and who looks strikingly similar, you know, it's
wild,
easy to
you
see
know,
where that goes.
Because DNA.
Right. Now, Marie II, she reigns over these voodoo ceremonies at Maison Blanche, but she never regained the high notice in the press. She supposedly drowns in Lake Pontchartrain in the 1890s. And then strangely, it's when Marie II dies that Marie I just passes into obscurity. And since the public never made the distinction between mother and daughter, the death of one ended the career of the other.
That is wild.
Okay. So that's the myth.
Yeah, okay.
You ready for the truth?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is in one of the podcasts that I listened to. It talked about Carolyn Merrill Long. She goes to New Orleans, had no real idea of what to expect. She, you know, uncovers the story of Marie Laveau and is fascinated. And she's like, I've got to know more. So she does the what I would do. And she picks up the only book on the subject she can find. And as she's reading this thing, she realizes it's complete bullshit. Like she can just smell through it. And so she decides that she's going to really go in deep. And this woman digs through archival records. She is making friends with everybody in the dark, papery, mildewy vaults. And she uncovers this thing called the Louisiana Writers Project. Have you ever heard about this?
I'm going to say no off the top of my head.
Okay.
I would like to say yes, but I can't guarantee that.
FDR, he's trying to revitalize the U.S. and trying to get people back to work. And so as part of his New Deal to drum up jobs, he creates writers' projects in the various states to put the out-of-work writers to work. And the people for New Orleans worked underneath this one dude who's like, you know, I always wanted to learn about Marie Laveau. So he tasks the people working underneath him for this writers' project to go interview the people who are alive, who knew her, who met her, who interfaced with
her.
That
is awesome.
And
Okay.
They put together boxes and boxes of interviews.
That is awesome. I did not know that.
And this, it's from, you know, kind of some, so it's from archival records because, let me back up a second. The Sainte Marie Laveau was a Catholic. And New Orleans is incredibly Catholic, or at least was in her day. The Catholic Church was really good at writing things down.
Oh, immeasurably good at it.
Now, the Catholic Church in New Orleans was also good at writing things down. So we have a lot of paper records. So between the records that we have from the sacramental records and the newspaper clippings at the time, the archival records that have been drummed up, coupled with the Louisiana Writers Project papers, there is a treasure trove of information that was never really dealt with. And a lot of
That's
people have
very
been
exciting.
regurgitating all of these various myths that they've heard somewhere from a tour guide, from the dude at the coffee shop. And so we've been perpetuating a lot of the old stuff. Now, Marie's great grandmother, Marguerite, is born in Senegal around 1736. She's on the last slave ship that the French bring over.
Okay.
So we're able to really trace things back. And she's the slave of a dude named Roche Belair. He's a shoemaker. And it's there that she fathers, or that she doesn't father, she mothers a couple of children. She gives birth to, if you will, if my biology is right. And one of the children is Marie Laveau's grandmother. So most claim that Marie Laveau's father is that wealthy white planter. But we know that Charles Laveau, Marie's dad, is a prosperous free man of color who owns several businesses. And we've got the paper records. He didn't own a plantation.
Okay.
And he didn't claim her as his legitimate heir, but he does help her out quite a bit through life.
Okay.
Like they actually have business dealings when she's an adult.
That's cool. I didn't you're I only know the mythology, so I'm very excited here.
Good. Now we know, remember I said previously that Marie Laveau was born in 1700. I don't remember what it
Can
is.
you
I'm
do
not spelling it.
that again?
17 perturber.
Mm-hmm.
But we know for a fact that she was born in 1801, and we have the baptismal record.
Okay.
Now, Marie's raised mainly by Grandma Catherine Henry, and she's raised on St. Anne Street. And St. Anne, that house on St. Anne Street was the one that when Grandma bought herself out of freedom, she also bought a cottage on this plot of land.
Oh, what a legacy.
And she lives a couple of blocks from St. Louis Cathedral and across the street from this place called Congo Square. Now, when we think about Marie Laveau's vocation, she might have been a hairdresser, but we don't really know because despite being listed in city directories year after year after year and the census every 10 years, she never has any vocation attributed to her. But to be fair, Voodoo
Most
Queen,
women didn't. Isn't a box you can check.
right? Like, okay. And can you read? Okay, you can't read. Can you write? No. Okay. Vocation? I'm just gonna leave that blank. We're just gonna skip past that. It's, you know, it's fine. I've got to get to the next house.
And then they run.
Now, this was something that made me so very excited. Kathleen Merrill Long, she refers to Vodou, and she is very clear to distinguish it. And she uses the French spelling, Voudou. And because whenever she sees Voodoo, it tends to kind of devolve into this real bizarre Hollywood-esque caricature of what she feels that it
Yeah.
really is. She refers to it as the only Afro-Catholic religion in North America, full stop.
Okay.
And when she looks at it, she says people from Senegal, they come to New Orleans. Now, New Orleans voodoo is very different from Haitian voodoo. Okay, so I'm not speaking about Haitian voodoo. Don't at me. I've only read a finite number of sources. So I am being very clear to distinguish that. For Merrill Long's writing, she says that when you get the people from Senegal coming over and looking at the Catholic faith, they look at things a little bit differently. And so while we might look at it and say, oh, Marie Laveau left her faith, she abandoned her faith by taking up voodoo practices. For the people practicing voodoo in New Orleans, they kind of felt it was very akin to what they're practicing, to Catholicism. Because there is the ultimate God, you know, the head God that is comparable to God the Father. There's a female deity that's very reminiscent of Mother Mary. And then there's what they call the Loa. And the Loa are the spirits that go around and really muck up the daily mm-hmm. life. Now, those could easily be viewed as the saints. You could pray to the saints. You could pray to the Loa. And mm-hmm. the priest.
You offer them gifts.
There we go. We got offerings. You light a candle. You have an altar in your home. If you're practicing Catholics, still have altars in their homes to this day.
Mm-hmm.
You go to multiple authors, you know, authors, altars. You know, there's prayers. There's like, so they're
the
looking at
the thing.
They're like, I see a one-to-one comparison. The priests have these prayer cards with pictures of the saints, and the practitioners are looking at them and they're going, oh, I know that one. Yeah, that's so-and-so.
That matches.
Yeah, like, oh, he's got a weird face here, but I know who we're talking about.
Like, I don't know why, but that just made me think of the lovely internet photo of Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan Kenobi, and the guy going, my grandmother thought this was Jesus for like
Yes.
20 years.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. White Jesus is really Obi-Wan.
Truly.
Prove me wrong.
I'll wait.
And I found that really exciting, right? To see somebody really validate the faith of so many people and talk about how this was just Catholicism with a different flavor.
Spicy Catholicism.
spicy Catholicism. That's what we're here for. Now, we know that Marie Laveau was married in a Catholic church to her first husband, Perry. Now, we have the records. She baptized the two children they had at that church. Now, they both died fairly young. And then when she had more children with Glapion, the ones who died young were buried there, and she attended Mass regularly. We don't know if she attended Mass daily, but we do know that she was there often.
Okay.
And we also know that she was buried at the Catholic cemetery, which is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, voodoo or vodou was really about how to be in harmony with the earth, yourself, the community. And for Marie, this is how she expressed her faith. It just had a spicy flavor.
Yeah.
And as part of her devout practice, we know that she made gree-gree, but we also know that she never got rich. And I hate to say, we know this, and this is the bummer. In fact, with her second, I'm going to say marriage, because I think she would have married Glapion if given the chance. I think that
Can there
was
just call it a common law marriage.
That's what we're going with. Unfortunately, Glapion wasn't good with money, and she nearly lost her house when he died, because the laws of inheritance were as such that the government didn't want white men to leave their loves of color, anything basically. And so Glapion tried to get around that by selling it to a free black person who wasn't related to him. And then when, you know, with the known thought that when he dies, that that's going to be given to Marie Laveau and be hers outright, because black people can give property back and forth. The problem is the house had a mortgage on it.
Oh, I was just thinking, like, that's so weird, because it was her house to begin with.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, basically a
yeah,
lot
but
of weird things.
She has a uterus. So
was she, well, but I mean, I think more than anything, it was just things happened. The house was used as collateral, and then there were
right.
problems, right? So all of that happens, and she ends up needing friends to save that house from her losing it. Like, it gets super desperate, and she does everything that she can to hold her family together, because again, she's got kids. She doesn't have the 15 kids that she's claimed to have, you know, with the mythology, but we know that she had seven with Glapion. And later,
still so many children.
oh yeah. Now she was also bringing in orphans off the street,
So that could account for the 15.
and raising her grandkids.
Oh, yep. She had 15.
She had 15. Now, did she get all of those herself? No, but they 15.
Build all of them herself?
I mean, look, you know, I'm not going to judge. If you're a mom, you're a mom.
Agreed.
Now, after the Reconstruction, because, you know, we have the Civil War, and then after the Reconstruction, we see where the United States is really trying to take these people who've been enslaved for their entire lives and kind of elevate them to personhood, for lack of better words. There's things that happen. The newspapers and the media as a whole tends to use voodoo as a way to demonstrate that Black people are so full of superstition and they're not deserving of the vote.
Of course.
And so it's in a 19 or an 1894 news article that they talk about boiling a cat and eating it alive. Now, both of those things can't be true.
I was just going to say, how are we?
So, listeners, what you don't know is that I held up two fingers because the boiling of the cat and eating it alive. And my computer does this thing where it alerts to my body language and comes up with things that it thinks I mean. And in this case, it released a ton of balloons. Now, balloons are not important to this part. And in fact, they take
Not
away
at
from the
all.
story. But Angie's losing it because my computer is against me.
It was, listen, your computer's just trying to throw you a party for having a great story. That's all that's happening.
It's like, listen,
And I can't contain myself, so
I
it's
know.
mostly my
Yeah.
fault.
No,
Sorry.
it's not though. It's not though. I mean, I'm here for it. You were gonna say
I
though.
wish I had. Oh yeah, I was thinking, like, are we only boiling them a little? Like sautéing them? Like,
Yeah, I
what are we
mean,
doing?
look, we're here to make stuff up. We're not here to make it believable.
Truly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things I want to make sure I touch on, because this part really got me, is Marie Laveau really did serve and minister to many people on death row. She prayed with them. She would go into their cells and build altars in their cells to really focus on getting them right with their maker. One man, as he knows he's going to die, she has his coffin brought into his cell. And she helps him decorate it with scripture, religious symbols, the whole nine. He sleeps in this casket, again, to prepare his own body for it. I mean, this sounds a bit macabre to me, but I really appreciate this. And the only relative he had in the area was his 3-year-old daughter. And so, as his pillow, he used the dress of his little girl to just be close to somebody. And that was really how she helped him kind of get ready for what was about to happen, for that transition. Now, we do know that she helped many people campaign for freedom. And it's kind of rare when you look at the record that if she went to bat for you, that you didn't get a stay of execution or you didn't get your sentence commuted. Now, was it diplomacy? Was it magic? Was it just leverage that she had on the judge? I don't know. And it's impossible to
She was
know.
good at it.
Right. If she thought you needed a helping hand, you got it. And I think that's what matters. We also have reports from 1850 to 1860 of Marie Laveau paying the bonds of several women of color who were arrested for minor crimes.
Wow, okay.
So she was here to help, and she was here to serve her community. Now, while we do talk about these many positive things, I do need to touch on the fact that I did say the mythology would have us believe that she helped on the Underground Railroad. Marie Laveau owned slaves.
That checks. When you
We
think
know.
about how,
Go
I'm
for it.
sorry, go ahead.
No, please. This is, I'm.
So I was just thinking, like, we know, how do I want to word this? Okay. So especially like leading up to the Civil War and just post the Civil War, like let's say the decade, like the five and five. Okay. So you could, leading up to the Emancipation Proclamation, you could buy your own freedom and then turn around and buy your family, and they're listed as your slaves until they can buy their own freedom, or you can buy their freedom for you. The other side to that is she lives in New Orleans, right? Like the I don't want to say the exchange of people, but the ease with which that would work and her still be a pillar in her community in New Orleans makes so much sense. And I would imagine whether she's involved with the Underground Railroad or not, she's probably pretty decent bloke one way or the other. Like, I'm not saying she went out and bought her slaves to get them out of slavery, but I am saying that that is a possibility, however slim.
It doesn't look like she did it to get them out of slavery because she bought 8 slaves and she sold all 8 at a profit.
And
So,
then lost her house.
I mean, she didn't lose her house, but things happen and she had to work really hard to get help to make sure she, it didn't go completely. We do
Right.
know that one of the slaves that she bought had a condition that they would be freed when they hit the age 25. And when you have a slave with that kind of, there's a specific word like remuneration. I don't think that's the right word, but when they have that kind of condition on their slavery, that they're ineligible to be used as collateral for a loan.
Okay.
For whatever reason, that was how the laws were written. But we have proof that she did indeed use that slave as collateral, knowing full well that was illegal. Like she just did what
How
she
did
had to
that
do.
work?
I wasn't there at the time.
I
I
guess
didn't
that's
see the
true.
handshake. You know what I mean?
I'm just trying to see how the paperwork went for that.
I mean, I'm just thinking that they didn't look too deeply. And now people can go, wait a minute. But wait, I'll go back one. You know,
These
but
names match.
yeah, wait a minute. She's supposed to, this is not supposed to be for her. But that's kind of what it was.
Or more likely, they just didn't care.
Little of column A, little of column B.
Yep.
Now, one of the cool things that I learned is she allowed Choctaw Indians to camp in her yard while they were coming into town to sell their wares at the market. And that was something that existed in both mythology as well as real life.
That's really cool.
Right? Like she just, you know what? I've got space. You need space. Here we go.
Here's my yard.
Right. And I found that just so exciting. Now, I did talk about how she cared for orphans, you know, because the myth that she had 15 kids, but she only had 7 with Glapion. Census.
Only that's still a ginormous
No,
number.
it's still incredible. We have census records showing that there were various children in her home. We also have reports that in 1852, she paid for the education of an orphan that she referred to as her protege, which I found so endearing.
Interesting. And this is an orphan, not little Marie too.
No, it not little Marie too, but funny you mention her because Marie too, from what we know, we don't know. We can't figure it out. And there's a lot of historians who really try. Now, there's the possibility that Marie the second could be from her first marriage because she had 2 daughters. I should avoid doing the peace sign so there's more balloons. Both the daughters in the first marriage, they end up dying in early childhood. And we know this because of paperwork where she refers to herself as the Widow Perry without children, which is a big bummer, but the child mortality rate was
Not high,
astronomically
or
high.
was astronomically high. Yeah,
Yeah,
not
it
low is
was
what I meant to say.
no opposite of.
Yeah.
Now, we do know that she did have seven children with Glapion, but only two survived into adulthood, and they were both daughters. Now, there was basically all the daughters were named Marie to make life
Of
easy.
course.
Now, I'm assuming if everybody's first name is Marie, you go by your middle name. There was Eloise, and Eloise died when she was young, but an adult, I think like 25, if I'm going off memory correctly. And the surviving daughter when Marie Laveau dies is Marie Philémine. Now, Marie
Oh, what a cute
Philémine,
name.
right? She detests any mention of voodoo in relation to her mother. Her mother was a saint. She went to church all the time. Don't you talk about her mother. So one would assume that perhaps she is not taking over the voodoo practice if she doesn't even want it mentioned in front of her.
This checks?
That just
Or it's a
that
really great cover?
why would you cover if you're using it to sell Grigri?
I'm unclear. I'm just, like when you try to cover a conspiracy by saying it doesn't exist.
Yeah. I don't know. Now her tomb, her this part was absolutely fascinating. Her tomb has 84 people buried in it. You're nodding. You're like, I knew that. Yeah. 84. How many of them are family?
I would venture to guess probably not many.
You're not wrong. 25. Many of the
Of
people,
84.
yeah, most of them were just people who didn't have a final resting spot. And that was just an act of charity she did because that's what the church called you to do.
There you go.
So I'm looking at it, I'm like, this girl healed the sick. Because we know during a yellow fever outbreak, they call on her to be like, can you actually help out? Because to deal with the yellow fever, they were literally blowing cannons to try to clear the miasma out of the air.
Wow, I didn't know that. That's
And
insane.
she's like, how about we, like, I don't know, wipe their brows down, give them some broth, and like really try to nurse them
Open
through
the
it.
windows.
Right. So yeah, magic, medicine, both.
Magic is just science we don't understand.
Exactly. Now, she was healing the sick, she's burying the dead, she's sheltering the orphans, feeding the hungry. I mean, honestly, like this girl. Basically, every time I think about her, I view her as a living saint. You know, we have in the 1920s, 30s, and 40s, voodoo kind of takes over and her story is weaponized and she's villainized.
Yeah, I was thinking that just a few minutes ago. Like, it's so funny how history looks back at particularly women, but situations in general, and all of a sudden the mythology and everything changes. And for so many years of our lives, we just assume one thing,
Right.
you know? Yeah.
Because of her magic practice and because of people praying to her, miracles are happening in her name.
Wild.
Now, I'm like, this puts her in sainthood, as far as I'm concerned. If Olga Akiyev can be a saint, if
I
Olga
mean, truly.
of Kiev can hit sainthood,
If
I'm
Olga
voting.
let me burn you to the ground, Ki of Kiev can
Right.
make it to
Let me bury
sainthood.
you in your boat, Kiev. I vote Marie Laveau for sainthood.
I'm here for it. Where do
Now,
we petition?
I will find a list. Thinking about her, I kind of got onto my little high horse, and I was thinking a lot about like Voodoo Queen Julia Brown from episode 50. And really looking at how who is telling the story about this voodoo queen is revealing more about themselves than about that actual person. And Carolyn Merrill Long ends her book in the only way I can think of ending this story. What we can piece together from the published sources and oral histories is a silhouette of Marie Laveau, her mere outline lacking all the color of a real portrait. Tantalizingly incomplete, she is perhaps more magnetic than she would be if she were fully known. Her enigma tempts us to shape her to our will, and her image has evoked over time in response to shaping prejudice, fantasies, and desires of those who look for her. As a mirror, Marie tells us more about the era of which she is observed than she does about herself. She remains untouched and unknown, secure in her enduring aura of mystery.
That's so good.
And
that's
that,
so good.
Yeah, that's the story of Marie Laveau.
Oh my gosh. I am still so mad and so delighted at the same time. I would not want to hear the true story from anybody else. Well done.
Thank
Love
you.
It. Indeed. I salute you.
I mean, it was one of those, like, I was like, maybe she won't. I don't think this is on her list, but I know I have to do it. I know I have to do it. I have to do it.
You know what's funny is I was going to say this at the beginning of my topic, but I think one of my favorite things about history, and I don't care how it makes me sound one way or the other, but one of the things to me is the enduring mystery of history, right? Mm. Like, the amount of effort that people go into to try to learn to fully understand something, like your researcher for Marie Laveau. Like,
yeah.
First of all, this person, this event, this moment in history is so interesting to someone several hundred years later that they're willing to dedicate their time and their effort and their energy to fully understand it when there's no way we really can. Like,
yeah.
I think that's what makes it so fun. And the idea of magic or other, you know, well, pseudo history, whatever you want to call it, makes it that much more exciting, because again, we weren't there, we don't know, we can only put together our references and assume that we have the outline, or as she said, the silhouette of the picture, right?
Yeah.
Even though you have oral history and you have firsthand interviews for so much of history, but that still doesn't tell us exactly what it is. And that's so fun to me. And I think that's why history is so much fun. Like, there's so much we don't know.
Right. Well, and you know, one thing I didn't know, when I told you, you inadvertently shared a picture of this person. I knew I lied to you when I said it. You shared a picture of purportedly Marie Laveau in a tignon when you did the tignon laws.
Mm-hmm. And as soon as I said tignon earlier, I was like, dang it.
That's the one. The problem is, that's not a portrait of Marie Laveau.
That's what we assume, right? Like,
but according to Marie Philemon, her mother never posed for a portrait or a picture or a photograph. And when she was presented with that painting, that's not what she looks like.
Isn't that wild?
So we have, like, no idea. We know what Stagecoach Mary looks like, but we have no idea.
Oh, because Stagecoach Mary had no ounce of shyness to her.
Marie Laveau
I don't
doesn't
think.
Sound like she was afraid.
No, I don't think it's a matter of afraid. Like, think of the difference of jobs, right? Like, Stagecoach Mary's not, her job doesn't bank on her mystery. Whereas Marie Laveau, like, I'm sure she had the forethought to be like, if they, even as even alive, if they don't know, if they don't have a record of me, then I keep them wanting to know.
Interesting.
That's
I don't
what
know.
I would think.
I don't know if it's that, or I don't know if it's more never in the right place at the right time.
Or maybe she just wasn't a fan. There are plenty of women out there that don't like their picture taken.
What if the real Marie posed for a portrait and looked at it and went, I don't look like that, ripped it off the canvas and burned it?
I'm here for it.
Right?
Yeah, I am here for it. I love seeing like I know it's so stupid, but I love seeing like character art that was done at the time, like what artists made Marie Antoinette look like when they were campaigning against her, because I always think to myself, could you imagine being such and such famous person and seeing this character of yourself and being like, excuse me?
Well, I mean, and that's one of my favorite tropes when you do a period movie, when you have the outlaw hold up the wanted poster and be like, I don't look like this, whether it's a dead ringer or not. You know what I mean?
That's like, not me. You got the ears wrong.
Like, do you see, like, it looks exactly like him. Do you see what a meathead they made me look like? This is ridiculous.
I love that. And I love, I can't remember if it was Queen Charlotte in the Bridgerton series, but I've seen it a lot where they show like the young man, the portrait of the lady he's going to marry. And then you see the lady standing right there and they don't look at all like they
Yeah.
do not match.
It's very,
Oh.
it's serving Henry Tudor and, oh, which wife was it?
Oh, it was the
Anna
German one.
Cleves?
I think so. That feels so right. Like, yeah, that feels right. I could be wrong. Are you Googling?
No, I'm not Googling. Should I? I'll Google. I'll Google. I'm trying not to knock over my sifter of. Yeah, she's the ugly one. The ugly one.
Yep, he called her a horse.
I mean, my husband's called me worse. And we also have a great relationship.
We all have our moments.
Right. I mean, he's called me worse. I have been worse than a horse.
I've
A
been more
horse's
stubborn
ass,
than
if you will.
one. No.
Yeah.
How,
I mean,
what a lovely representation.
I do what I can. I'm, you know, honestly, I just want to make sure that when he goes to therapy for me, it's merited. And I want to make sure
You
that
know,
he entertains the therapist.
If you're doing anything right, I mean, truly, as that therapist is then going to their therapist.
So, scale of 1 to 10, how pissed are you that I did Marie Laveau?
Can I say 5 because I'm equally pissed and delighted?
That's fair. That's fair. We should probably end the podcast so I have something to actually end it with. So I don't like delete it and like get to the end and go, oh shit, we didn't close out. Let me do that real
Way
quick.
To go.
So if you've enjoyed listening to my telling of Marie Laveau and running Angie so far out of time that we actually have to forego listening to her story and do a single episode, which I'm sure you're both equally excited and annoyed by, then you can rate, review, subscribe, and tune in next week when I actually let Angie talk. And on that
I
note,
don't mind. I like just listening. Bye.
Bye.